3, 2, 1. Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. And the song we just played is from a local artist. The name of the song, Kilon J.A. And I just butchered the name. But anyway, got that African vibe, that Afrobeat flavor. But it is Oakland's very own Emina. And she is in the building with us. And welcome to the show. How you doing, sis?
Peace and love, my brother. I'm doing good. How about you?
We were just joking. You know, is that record finally released? Because, you know, the way I got that song was we did a gig, right? Yes. And you was like, oh, I need somebody to play my music. So you put it in my computer and never took it back. I've been playing it. So I hope it wasn't like, it ain't mastered yet. It's good? Is this the real deal?
Oh, it's Gucci and Fendi. It's extra good, you know? So this is actually Fela's birthday. It's the 1 year anniversary of us releasing a song. So the song is officially 1 year and 2 days old. So glad you have it. Keep it in rotation.
Was it inspired by Fela?
It was. And the song is written in Yoruba and English. So the word Kilon Shele means what happened, what's happening. And so it's me as a quote-unquote African-American speaking to the African community in our original language, letting them know that just because our ancestors were taken away doesn't mean our African essence, our African roots were taken away. So we say, Kilon Shele, oh, Akata Minobi So. Don't call us outsiders. Don't call us those black Americans over there. We are brothers and sisters just like we never left.
You know, it's interesting. Over the past couple of years, you know, we've seen the Afrobeat movement. And it used to be a time for a few generations, if you would tell them, you know, what artists do you know outside of the U.S., about the closest they would know would be Soul to Soul and, you know, and Mark Monson, you know, who did, The Mac Is Back and all that, right? You know,
right.
But, you know, the folks from England, you know, maybe if you were the new wave, they might know some people from down under, but... A lot of folks weren't really checking for or didn't really know, outside of Fela, you know, all the artists coming from the continent. I mean, older folks knew the Maryam Makabas and what have you, but it seems like now it's just kind of flowing. Like, you know, everybody from, you know, WizKid to Misty E to, you know, I mean, in fact, you probably more likely to hear Afrobeat and music that's not from here than you are, you know, from here. So how do you feel about that now?
I feel like the time is now. And Fela said, you know, he said a lot of prophetic things when he was with us. And one of them was that music, African music, is going to take over. And that is the next big wave. So it's something that's been developing for a while, but now it has global recognition. Just the U.S. is acting like they haven't caught on, and Afro beats as a genre isn't officially recognized by the music institutions here, which is kind of to their detriment. So it's something that is time has come.
Right, and we have another guest here, and he can actually verify what I'm about to say, because he's been around the world on I at least 30 times on tour. But, you know, and I actually learned it from the group Public Enemy. We have Professor Griff in the house with us this afternoon. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, Chuck, your partner, was always telling me, he said, you know, you need to get a passport and go see the world. That was the one thing that he would always tell me. And, yeah, now you're saying why you can, you know. So I did get that passport, and I did get a chance to go around the world. And one of the things that I saw is that London knows what's going on in Nigeria. Nigeria knows what's going on in Brazil. Brazil knows what's going on in New Zealand. And it seems to be a global conversation, at least music-wise. And it just seemed like it was here that it would be like, you know, folks would be hard-pressed. Like, name some artists out of Mexico. In Mexico, right down the road. You know, outside of Drake, name some people in Canada and, you know, in hard press. But I just always found that when I went around that there seemed to be not only an awareness of what we're doing, but also these conversations where the U.S. isn't necessarily centered, you know. And, you know, from your perspective, do you see this change finally, you know, some of these walls coming down and people at least now taking a look, especially with stuff coming out of the continent?
Yes, and we can attribute that to three major factors. Technology, we can attribute it to hip-hop, music in general, especially the vibrational pitch of hip-hop, And then I think we can attribute to the fact that people are looking, they've actually embraced the concept of being local, thinking global. Because now our African cousins are coming over and saying, you know, this is what's going on. Back in the day, it used to be your country cousin from down south used to kind of let you know what was going on in the south. Now it's global. Now your country cousin, your African cousin is coming over like, look, I see what y'all doing because I was on Skype or I was on Zoom or I saw a Facebook Live thing or something else was going on. And the amount now of different people on the front lines with their own news services. Your average brother with a camera and a microphone now is sending this stuff out. And it's like, wow, this stuff is going on over there. So we're actually making the, I call it the cosmic common thread connection. Because there's a common thread. It's just that the thread has been cut because America seemed like it's isolated. Do you understand what I'm saying? Well, America isolates its citizens, so to speak. They don't want any outside news coming in. Because once that happens, we start to think global.
What's the advantage of thinking globally? And you know, and as you said there are power structures that don't want us to do that. But what have you found from your travels with Public Enemy that has made that global thinking to your advantage?
Movements. The whole idea of the word movement. When you know that you're in the streets in Brooklyn, and the same brothers are in the streets in Kenya. Then the same brothers in the streets in South Africa and in Brazil and other places. It's like, wow, okay. A lot of times we run into people, and I'm sure both of y'all have heard this. Sometimes I just feel like I'm on an island by myself, and I'm the only one that thinks this way. I'm like, no, there's other ants in this mound. You understand what I'm saying, man? That think exactly the way you do. You just not connected with them.
Have we gotten used to not always being centered? And let me preface this by this way. Once upon a time, New York was a centerpiece, right? Mm-hmm. And if you were from New York, you were used to that. You know, you'd be like in Philly, like, we from New York. Oh, wow, there's New York in the house. We go to Boston, New York in the house, North Carolina, right? And when you were back east, the only place that it kind of was like, who cares, might have been Washington, D.C., right? You go out from New York and go, well, we Chocolate City. Right? You're New York, but we 90% black. So they were on their own island, like, okay, we'll give you that. And it wasn't until I moved out here, you know, dropped into Oakland and be like, from New York. And it's like, all right. I think I have a cousin there, you know. And New York wasn't centered. And I bring that up because for so long, the music and entertainment, well, music business kind of dominated that. And then all of a sudden, you know, people like, you know, the people from Oakland are going to talk to the people in Atlanta. Atlanta's going to talk to Kansas City. Kansas City going to talk to Chicago. Chicago going to talk to Houston. We're not even thinking about New York, right? And it was very hard for New York to be like, yo, we the birthplace. And it'd be like, yeah, that's cool. But, you know, we got this thing going on between us and Idaho, you know, and we're going back and forth in Boise. And that's how we build. So I use it as a microcosm to say for, you know, that the U.S. was so used to it. Now I describe like these global ciphers and conversations that seem to have been taking place for a while. And we just now showing up in it. But it's been going on for a minute.
A long minute. But surprisingly enough, New Yorkers ended up in all those places you can name. Because I went to Iowa and I saw that brother. When I say, yo, it's New York in the house, one brother in the back, yo, Brooklyn.
So Brooklyn will always be. Brooklyn's its own planet. There will always be somebody from Brooklyn somewhere.
Right, exactly. So like myself, I've been in Atlanta for a minute, but from New York. And I find now, even in Atlanta, they got actual like Brooklyn parties.
Really?
They got clubs on a certain night that people from Harlem go to. You understand what I'm saying? So you're right. Brooklyn will always be in, New York will always be in out somewhere, everywhere.
But going back to this not being centered, that's what I was trying to make the point. You know, are we ready to not be centered, not be the main source of the conversation and understand that people got other things going on and it's popping in other places and, you know, you might have to take a back seat to what's going on in Nigeria. You might have to understand that South Africa's popping on the music tip and we're trying to catch up with them. Well, you're not the other way around.
Right, exactly. If you're talking about certain agendas, we may not be the center of the conversation. But I think when it comes to hip-hop, I think we can't have a conversation unless you put your finger on the pulse of the birth of hip hop. And then and only then, even when it comes to hip hop, when you take it a step further, you got to talk about Africa. Then you have to talk about all those syncopated rhythms and patterns and intricate patterns that come from any village in Africa. You can hear them at any church on Sunday.
So that decenters the U.S. then, because we're taking it back to the motherland.
We're taking it back
to the essence. So, yeah, you sparked it off here, but, you know, there's a lot of sparks that were taking place. But all of it is rooted in his motherland that now people are now starting to look at and be like, you know what? I'm doing all right, but now I'm really seeing drums. Now I'm really seeing rhythms.
Right. But I think I wouldn't say the center is the U.S. The center is wherever we are. You understand what I'm saying?
When you say we, you mean?
We as a people who are the origin of all of this, we could be anywhere and create that vibe. You understand what I'm saying? And then we'd have to scratch our heads like, wait a minute. That DJ was just playing some hardcore gangster stuff, and now I'm hearing some Afro beats. You understand what I'm saying? So any DJ, any night at any club, anywhere that black people are, you're hearing a wide variety of music. You understand what I'm saying? And, well, I don't know. I was at a couple of spots.
But that's a good thing now. That's what I'm getting at. Because for a minute, everything seemed narrow-casted.
Of course.
And now our palate is like, you know what? It's wide open again. It's not going to be defined by an industry, but it seems like we're trying to find, you know, some other things. How are you seeing this, Amina?
I'm definitely seeing it happen. And I think what Professor Griffith said is right on point. Wherever we are is where the energy is going to flow. And I think now it's a deeper recognition of that. And I'm seeing, like, I've been tuned into Africa from birth, and that's been like a blessing of how I grew up. Now the rest of the world is catching up to that. And Africans themselves are taking ownership and pride of what is coming out of Africa and saying, this is what we have to offer, instead of trying to imitate, you know, what the U.S. is doing all the time. But that the same agenda that was being pushed here is also being replicated in Africa, in the Afrobeat scene in a different way. Like, I just looked at a WizKid video yesterday, and he's in the video in Africa. A lot of the girls are looking like the same type of girls they have in the videos here. And then he's doing the video the whole time with that double styrofoam cup. And there's a huge epidemic in Nigeria right now of people taking lean, taking a lot of, I think it's like Drexcol or something like that, where there's a drug epidemic and a drug culture that's being pushed out there. So that is a thing that is kind of troubling at the same time, is that even though the Afrobeats scene is rising, the music industry is seeing that and also being intentional about putting in a lot of elements that we're seeing in the hip hop scene as well, that's just killing the youth.
The voice of Amina. And let me just say this before we get into, you know, and I want Griff to jump in and on this. Happening this Friday, that's why Professor Griff is in town, between 8 and 1, Amina is having an album release party celebrating and honoring Fela Kuti's legacy in musical activism. It's called Melanated Music is the Weapon of the Future. So she's going to be there along with the Afro Divas. Professor Griff will not only be hosting, but he's also going to be giving a lecture talking about the state of the game. And that's going to kick off around 8, and all this is happening at the Uptown Nightclub this Friday. So again, Professor Griff and Amina will be in the building. And it's going to be a celebration of Fela Kuti, Afrobeat, melanated music, and incredible performances. And so I just want to get that in there. But let's go back, you know, Griff, he was saying about, you know, this exportation of, you know, pathologies, you know, being now pushed by the music industry. How would you compare, you know, for the 30-plus trips that you and Public Enemy have done all around the world, you know, being throughout the continent and seeing what's happening now? Have you seen those types of encroachments? And if so, why is that happening, and what can be done to turn that around and not have it, you know, suddenly be a subsidiary of the craziness that, you know, many people here are like, man, we need to escape this.
I think until we control the source of education, the source of information, and it works both ways, how it comes in and how it's disseminated out. Until we control that, every single generation will pick up where the last generation left off with these unresolved cultural issues. The cultural issue, to some people, is not a political issue, but it's politically cultural. And we need.
What do you mean by that? Break that down for us.
So when you look at culture, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
You think music and entertainment for many people.
Exactly. That is political. But why would the artist that I'm sure you could name off the top of your head at least five, Amina could probably name 10, that have become political? Their music have become political. Everyone from Bono to Stevie Wonder on a civil rights tip. Everyone from James Brown to Sly and the Family Stone. You understand what I'm saying? Everyone from John Lennon, and we could go on and on and on. The culture in and of itself has a political component to it. And politics is the science of governing people. They understand that. Did I mention Kanye West? They understand that the music and the culture moves the masses of the people. They want to manipulate and control that. When we get a hold of that and control it, that's when the dynamic of it will change.
Well, we often hear that being said, what is it going to take and can you really control it? And I'm asking this understanding that some people are like, well, you know, I got an offer. I can have a car, can have money. I can be at all these big festivals. I can headline a Coachella and Treasure Island Music Festival. And, you know, and I see what you're doing, but man, I'm going to stunt this way, right? Mm. And then you have folks like yourself that are saying we need to own and control. So there seems to be a clash of desires at the very least, yeah. Right? So how do you resist that sort of very intentional seduction that is thrust before us that, you know, makes it very hard for people to maybe, you know, climb up on the rough side of the mountain, which I'm assuming you're saying is a necessary action that needs to be taken in order to have full control over your culture.
Yes, but not only that, you know, we could say did Earth, Wind, and Fire do it and still headline the tours and still got the big gig? Yeah, but they did it in such a way they made it palatable to the people. The whole idea of just digesting a concept that works on three levels that you can party to and hang out to and sing along to, you can grab the hairbrush with your tidy whiteys and your white tube socks on in the bathroom and still do the Earth, Wind, and Fire thing. You understand what I'm saying? Or you could piece it apart and dissect the lyrics along with Maurice White playing the kalimba and still get something out of it. Mm-hmm. Or you could just sit back and say nothing and just play the song on your radio show and it speaks volumes. Where are those artists at? Where's that vibration at? Bob Marley did it. James Brown did it. So it's not crazy to think that an artist of today can't do it. We just don't attempt to defy the norm. You understand what I'm saying? And break beyond the boundaries and the limitations of what an invisible industry. Because what is the industry now with the advent of the internet? Like, what is the industry?
But we should know that internet, you know, is now having algorithms that control. And that you now have some of the very same people that were problematic, you know, in these positions. So, you know, like a Lior Cohen is sitting over there at a YouTube and, you know, and so you have industry folks that now have moved into these positions and been like, okay, we'll control these algorithms. And for people who don't know, you know, like a lot of my students and young ones that I'm around, you know, they'll punch in, like if I punch in the name Lauryn Hill, it'll pull up on the side. It will show me a Public Enemy video, an X-Clan video. You know, somebody else punches it in there and it takes them down to Lil Pump and Lil Keek and a whole other array of artists. And then it will have some common suggestions that we all, you know, so we're all getting the same Taylor Swift suggestion. Huh? You know, how did that happen? We're all getting the same. You know, I'm just using it as a name because whatever they're promoting suddenly is right there alongside your feed. So that's happening. And what may also happen is the elimination. So unless I know, you know, an artist like Low Key, you know, Palestinian artist, which you know from overseas, mm-hmm. that was smashing on, like, you know, Obama and doing all these crazy, incredible videos, his name don't show up at all. Right. You know, it don't show up in the algorithms or anything. You got to punch it in. So I got to know that name right. because it never shows up as a suggestion. And you got to spell it right.
Yeah, you try putting in number two pencil, you end up with something else, man. You end up on Pornhub or something.
Easy. They'll put that first.
But anyway, you're absolutely correct. They've made this whole idea of switching from analog to digital. And this goes right in line with this because music has now become a weapon. And I don't know who said it, but, you know, the revolution will not be digitized. But it just might be. That may be the first line of offense or defense, the whole digitizing the revolution. Your logo, your meme, your statement, the vibration in the music. Now every song has to be associated with a video. Mm-hmm. Every video has to be associated with a brand.
But Public Enemy started that. Or was in the forefront of that.
In the forefront, right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you all were first putting out albums, you were, you know, when it was expensive to do videos, you had Public Enemy TV and you would get that VHS, I still have them, mm-hmm. with like 10 songs and videos.
Right.
And the whole concept that you all were saying was like, you need to be able to see so there's no misinterpretation of the words, you know. So if we sitting there, see, he said fight the power, that means, scrub the floors. Mm-hmm. No. This the video right there.
Right. And I think that's a beautiful thing because, as I always say, some people came to hear Public Enemy. Some people came to see Public Enemy. It was a beautiful thing that those family members that still have stuck with the Public Enemy vibe became family, and they synthesized both of those things. And now we're seeing with the, I call it the Beyonce business plan, business model, every song has to have a video. Because I want you to see exactly what I'm saying, but I want you to hear what I'm saying.
Is that a good or a bad thing?
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing simply because you cannot misinterpret anything that I'm about to tell you because I'm going to actually show you. For example, the shirt you have on, Okanda, people can mistake that for a whole bunch of things. But if you show them is how you got to that point, that concept is real in the life of you, your children, family members, organization, and how you can use that as a platform to build and bring young people in. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? How real is that when it comes to the visualization of, I some people say, well, you putting out an EP? I'm like, yeah. I said, all it is my lecture in musical form. Mm. You can do that at any age.
Right.
It's like an audio book, but with music.
That's the voice of Professor Griff Wills here with Sister Imena. Let me ask you this. And by the way, they are in town. Professor Griff is in town. Imena is local. They're going to be celebrating the musical legacy of Fela Kuti and melanated music in general. It is called Melanated Music is the Weapon. It is happening this Friday, October 19th. From 8 to 1 a.m. at the Uptown Nightclub, Professor Griff will kick things off by giving a lecture called The State of the Game. And, of course, it will be a wonderful evening of music. Sister Imena, whose music we heard earlier, will be dropping the serious vibes along with the Afro Divas. And a number of other, you know, performers will be there as well. A couple of things to both of y'all. Music is a weapon. We know Fela Kuti said that, right? Mm-hmm. And we saw a lot of people. And music was always a weapon even before he said it. And maybe you can give a little bit of history of how that's happening. But we also know that if that is understood, you know, when we were using the drums to communicate and it had to be banned and all that, that obviously that those who are in power are going to want to try and get ahead and turn that weapon against us, mm-hmm. right? So how can we effectively use music as a weapon, understanding that there are folks that are trying to weaponize our culture and our music against us at this moment?
That is a long conversation, but in short, and I'm going to pass this to Imena. I have a relative, I can't mention where she's at on the scale, but they work at a restaurant. And he said in their meetings, they basically say, this is the kind of music we play. Do not change the playlist. And this is the volume we're playing at. So I asked them when I went in one time to the restaurant. It's like, well, why do y'all play the music this way? She said, basically, we want the customers to get in, get their food, sit down for a minute and a minute only and get out.
So and they use the music. They play the music a certain way so that it'd be like, you know, let's bounce.
Yeah, exactly. So therapists use music to calm, right? We use music in different healing modalities and that kind of thing. And so there's music that's used. They use music to go to war. I don't remember if you remember the comedy sitcom or show, F Troop.
Mm-hmm.
Remember F Troop? Well, they blew the horn, the trumpet.
People used to sample that back in the days. Yeah.
Together for war. You understand what I'm saying? Let's fast forward it. Iraq War. They actually use music, hard rock, punk music, to disturb the soldiers because it was death to their ears. If you're holding your ears, you're not going to be hear the commands from the generals, the announcements, because the music disorientates you. You understand what I'm saying?
So they would use it against the people that they were fighting?
Yes, of course. They would use loud music, and they do that to this day. Now let's fast forward again. Acoustic sound weapons. Music that you don't even hear, but you feel it.
You were always talking about that. So
right,
here we
exactly.
are.
Exactly. I'm glad you remember that.
Yeah, you were saying there's these vibrations and chakras and all that, so that's a real thing now.
Oh yeah, they stepped it up to the point where they can actually manipulate your organs by using sound.
So what is our responsibility at this point? What do you all do as Public Enemy? What does Sister Amina do as, you know, with the Afro Divas? I'll start off with you.
I think making the music and bringing the music back in sync with the core of who we are as a people, bring it back in sync with the soul. And I think the melanated music will do that. The Afro beats will do that. Watch it. You're going to start seeing everyone else in all these other genres incorporate the Afro beats into their thing.
Because something about it, you know,
yeah.
Something about it, you know, like, you know, Nita, you know, produces the show. She's Nigerian. She said to me a long time ago, said, you know, you ever want to get people just dancing, just drop this. This is before people were even hip to what was going on. Mm-hmm. I said, nah, just drop it, you know. And she gave me a couple of songs and, you know, just drop it. And all of a sudden, people moving.
Yep.
I mean, everybody. Like, you don't even know it, you know. You know, if I play anything else, they'd be like, well, who's this? Nah. But this, they're just, you know, so that vibe is almost like the way reggae was a few years ago.
Right,
like, you
right.
just put
you
it on
just
and
move,
you just move to it. Right. And it seems like, you know, I can understand what you're saying with that being synced. Let me ask you this, you know, Amina. First, your understanding of this, but music, at least here in the U.S., black music, finds its very strong roots and ties in a spirit, right? Mm-hmm. Griff may call it a vibe, and when we move the word spirit, you know, it'd be like it's out of the church, right? You know, you're going to church, and when you're in church, black church, you feel it. You don't hear it. It don't matter if you don't have to have a good voice, right? But if you sing in front with conviction, you're singing with conviction. It's like everybody loses it, right? And it was long debates for a while about whether, you know, when some of the folks were moving out of the church and taking it secular, like, don't do that. You're going to contaminate it. Just keep it in the church, right? Mm-hmm. The Sam Cooks and Ray Charles would criticize, even Aretha and all that. And one might say, well, you know, you can't put the secret out there. And now they got hold of it and they're using what was moving folks in the church to move us in another direction. But are we able, and with your music and the music that you see others doing, are they able to recapture that spirit, you know, understanding what was once a very, very powerful type of expression that emboldened people? You know, you see that being said in Eyes on the Prize. They're like, people before the meetings at Montgomery bus boycott, they're like singing for 2 hours and everybody's charged up. In the Albany situation when King and them were organizing and SNCC, and they talk about people sung for 2 and 3 hours, right? So are you trying to get people back to that? And do you see that moving back to that spirit?
That's exactly where I'm coming from. And in order to me, in order to be a real artist, especially in this day and age, to have a real impact, you have to be at a certain place within yourself, within your soul, within your spirit, before you can really effectively share that with people and really understand the roots of where we're coming from. So very important, as we were talking about music being used as a weapon, if we go back to King Sundiata Keita of Mali, the classic story about how he was able to win back the Mali Empire was that he had a jelly, which is also known as a griot, Sumuro Kuyate, going back 72 generations, who was his personal jelly. That was his personal musician with the kora, with the balafone, with the drums, singing the songs in him. The story, the literal story, people can go Google it, is that his jelly played the music that allowed him to defeat the enemy. And so that was a standard of how in Africa we rolled. And we knew, that's why we had war songs. That's why we had songs for healing. We look at Kakilambe in Guinea, a whole musical healing that in most African dance classes and African dance companies, they're reenacting this now, but it's not that far from the future. I know people from the Kouyaté family from Senegal, from Guinea, who have moved here and who are teaching that, who I'm personally learning from, that I'm seeing that this is something that's been ingrained in our culture for so long, so we can still tap into it. We still can do that.
Oftentimes when we talk about music in a Western construct, we kind of just keep the music separate from the other expressions that come along with the music from an African concept. And, you know, along with that is always movement, right? Right. I mean, you can't, it's one and the same. It's part of it. And I bring that up, and Griff, maybe you can put on your thing, because if we're talking about hip hop, for example, and just looking at music and all this as a weapon and, you know, and war songs and all that, one of the things I'd always found very interesting that is not often talked about is that early on, before records and all this stuff, back in the 70s, you know, the early dances weren't just dances. They were actual war dances that the gangs would use. Like, some of the early uprocking stuff was like, nah, man, that's something that you now incorporate. But we was doing this dance because this is what we did before we went to war. And you would hear, you know, about people playing a James Brown and stomping around the room with a boots and, you know, and really getting hyped up. So it seems like we don't understand that. It might be showing up organically, but it seems like I guess I'm losing my train of the point that I wanted to make.
I know where you're going. Bringing the conversation back to being centered.
Yeah.
If you watch football every weekend, the brothers are there in the locker room getting everybody riled up. Let's go. That's that war chant. That's that vibration and that spirit. Of course, there's no music playing, but they hear it in their head and they're getting everybody in, whether they're doing chants in a huddle or whatever, but they're using it. But we have to keep in mind that they have weaponized not only music, they've weaponized food, they've weaponized weed.
Especially out here in California.
They've weaponized weed.
That's what that's the word. Like, yeah. It's legal. You could take it, and we won't call it crack. But it is, has the same effect now.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'm going to do a whole show on that because it's going to be very hard for people to, you know, what you,
Yeah.
And it's classism. It's class, especially with the marijuana. I'm seeing that being, you know, from here, from the Bay, and seeing how it's transformed. You have the people who have the cannabis cards and who are in the clubs getting these pure organic strains, non-GMO, small batch crafted. Then you got whatever's on the streets that's black, purple. People, you might bring some people on the streets some green marijuana, and they will throw it away. They will say, what is this green stuff? We only smoke purple. We only smoke black. It has to be crumbly. It has to just have crystals. It can't have any seeds or any stems. It's a plant. What are you talking about?
Wow. I didn't mean to bring up that conversation, but I'm saying we would talk about being scented and how they're weaponizing the music, but they're weaponizing everything around us. What better way to get back to the self which is the journey of the self through the self back to the self, then music, melanated music. Now, when we say melanated music, we're not saying if you don't have any melanin, you can't vibe to it. This melanated music will find the melanin in you and activate it.
Real talk there. Let me close out with this. How important was it for Public Enemy to make a switch from playing stuff on records and on DAT tapes and having a full-fledged band? You know, I mean, I don't know if people hadn't been to a show, but you all have a band and, you know, your stepson was guitarist and, you know, and doing all that. How important was that, and was there a difference in the vibration?
Yeah, what it did was it opened up a very narrow audience. It opened up that audience now. And it brought musicians out. It gave us a more organic feel. As you know, because you're close to Chuck, you know, Terradome had 20 samples, which we were sued for. And it's like, but how do you bring that together and then do the live thing over it?
I'm going to say the first weaponization was the lawsuits that were, you know, levied on artists who were basically doing the process of black music, which you go all the way back from the Field Hollers and what have you. It's like, okay, you sing a melody, I pick up on that melody, I add my own flavor. She comes along, she picks up on that melody, she has her own flavor, and it kind of comes full circle, right? You know, Ricky Vincent writes The History of Funk. He talks about it. It's called Vamping and Ripping, or, you know. And it seemed like what you all were doing, you know, it's like, okay, here's this James Brown thing, here's a little Prince thing, here's Sly Stone thing, we're going to take this, we're going to mash it up. And so you had that vibe within the music, and then you added your own flavor to it, and it was, you know, it wasn't because Chuck was rapping or y'all was doing something, there was something in there. It's like, man, this music hitting, right, you know? And then all of a sudden they were, I remember the record labels were offering $500 a pop. You know, if you could figure out the sample. People thought it was a contest, but it was like, oh, they give people the catalog and they say, if you recognize any of these songs, you know, we'll give you $500. And then people were like, oh, that's this one. You might, like you said, 20 samples that you wouldn't even know in a song. But then they were like, okay, we got 40 samples here. Mm-hmm. They gave people $500 times 40 and then came suing you guys for like millions.
Exactly. So subsequently, you know, we would never see a royalty check.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? And then laws are changing every single day. But do we belong to those groups where they send out the one massive email? Do we get, you know, when the law changed? It's like absolutely, absolutely not. So, you know, but
they're commodifying culture. That's the whole point. Okay. The same way that Monsanto will trademark seeds. And, you know, and other companies, agribusinesses will patent it, the way that you grow corn and all that. They was basically taking a cultural aesthetic and the movements around that aesthetic and then commodifying it and saying, you can't make music the way that you naturally do, which is to, you know, which is to regurgitate and add on.
Now, listen to the groups that you mentioned that Public Enemy used in the samples. Let's just say Prince, Lion and Family Stone, James Brown, Tower of Power, and a few other people, some gospel, okay, Temptations or someone. How many times have you bought these artists? My mom bought it, all right, on 8-track. Then I came up and bought it on wax and on cassette. Then the remix. Then it's digitized. But by the time we get a hold of it and sample it, and we put our song with a sample on YouTube, guess what happened? The algorithms will find it, flag it. All right, they'll send you a message saying they're going to shut your channel down if you can continue to use this song. But we got an alternative. Here's some songs you can use.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. The war is on, for real, bro. It's critical.
So does it really mean then being like you and me and just making your own music and then completely owning it so that you can control it? If I want to use it, you know, like I was playing a song before it was released, you ain't tripping. But if it's a big corporation, they got to pay you. I mean, is that what it means, really starting from scratch so you're not caught in that matrix?
We all come from that root. So it really is about us finding what in us can bring out that level of greatness and then being today's fruits. I think it's really just that. Like, We come from those roots. We can continue to bear those fruits. We can't limit our thinking and our artistry to think that, well, this is what we did back in the day, and this is how we did it back in the day. Okay, take that, vibe with that, live with that, and then bring out your contribution. So for me, like, I love Fela's music. I've been influenced and impacted by his legacy so much, and by his family and people that are in my personal circle now so much that it inspired me deeply as an artist. But did I say I'm going to redo a Fela Kuti song? Am I going to put him, you know, a sample of his on my song? No. I just have started writing my own songs. And when people say, you know, actually, when I'm listening to your song, and especially a lot of people here, they don't understand what I'm saying. When they get the translation, they like, oh, damn, well, that's like something Fela. When I played it for Fela's son, Shayun, he was like, oh, yeah, this is real Afro beats right here.
You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of when you, when someone see me out in New York, they say, oh, you're Professor Griff. Okay, because you remind me of my cousin. See, we're probably in the same family. We're not the same person, but we're probably in the same family. Your music is in that same family. But let me go back to my point with the YouTube thing and they're offering you other music. What if that other music is not melanated? Then they can take you away from the war chants. They can take you away from the... Let me tell you something. Right now, if I heard an M.O.P. joint, that just does something to me, man. It's like, yo, let's go. Yeah, an Onyx song. You understand? Yo, let's go. You understand what I'm saying? And sometimes that's what the Public Enemy sound does to people. It's like, yo, I'm ready to like... You understand what I'm saying? It does. What if they steered away us away from that vibration?
But that's happened. That's what I'm. Exactly. That's the point that I'm making. It's been very intentional. It's happened. You know, one of the things that was eye opening. And you know, I thank you all for, you know, like, travel around the world. Was when I was going to places, I was finding that when Public Enemy was pulled off the radio here, it was being pulled off in Nairobi. Right, it was being pulled off globally. You know, you start having these conversations like, yeah, you know, they told us that we couldn't hear that. And then you started seeing these rules put in place, like on some of these commercial outlets, don't play nothing more than 5 years old. That was another way of controlling things. I worked at a place where they were saying that. I worked at a place where they wouldn't let James Brown on the air when he was in the studio. Like, James Brown is here. It's like, nah, you can't come in, you know, like not allow him to do an interview. Right? He showed us a surprise. So I understood, you know, because of you all that, yeah, there was definitely a way to, you know, at least initially disconnect the young from the past, because hip hop with the sampling that you all were doing was connecting people to that past. So you were finding out about an M2Me and all these other artists because it was like, man, where'd you get that song from? So let me go learn about it. It's like, oh, that's where the bass line was. And so we were kind of, you know, completing a circle. And it was like, that's not going to happen again.
Right, right. But you know something? I think not only did we recognize it, we have to get permission from them in order to use it, because the Don Cornelius Foundation and everything that he brought us through Soul Train, someone else owns that. Death Row, all of that material, someone else owns that. James Brown Foundation, someone else owns that. Now Aretha Franklin's music, someone else owns that. Who owns the catalog to Maurice White's? I could go on and on with our elders and people that gave us this beautiful music and this sound and this vibration are leaving us. But are we taking the baton and saying, okay, I'm going to stand on the earth, wind, and fire elements, you understand what I'm saying, and move this kind of vibration forward and pass this down to young people? We're not doing that, man.
We're going to have to stop here, and we're going to continue this conversation on Friday.
Okay.
Professor Griff is in the building. He's going to be... You know, building off this and a whole lot of other topics. We didn't even talk about Kanye yet. And I'm going to let you. I'm going to let you build on that on Friday. The State of the Game lecture by Professor Griff. But it's also a big album release party for Sister Imena and the Afro Divas. A celebration of Fela Kuti's legacy of musical activism. It's called Melanated Music is the Weapon of the Future. It is happening this Friday night, 8 o'clock at the Uptown Nightclub, 1928 Telegraph Avenue. in the city of Oconda. There you go. So, yeah, that's going to be jumping off there. 8 o'clock is when that lecture starts. So, Professor Griff, we appreciate you.
Give thanks.
You know, Sister Amina, we appreciate you. And we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.